where we started with this film was that this extraordinary event, which took place on the 13th of February 2017, when the half-brother of the Korean dictator Kim Jong-un, a guy called Kim Jong-nam, enters Kuala Lumpur Airport Terminal 2, and within moments of entering, he is attacked by two ladies, two women who, one appears to sort of rub something on his face, and within a couple of hours, the man has died. And this story and the way that the murder was carried out is a fascinating story in itself. It's a story, it's a spy thriller story. It's really, really extraordinary. But the story also provides a unique window onto this country, which is really, really hard to analyze. It's really secretive. And there are very few moments like this that really sort of throw open the doors and allow you in to really understand what's going on inside North Korea and what's going on with the leadership. So what we were able to look at through this particular story, the life and the death of Kim Jong-nam, is really the process of regime consolidation by his brother. And that's what sort of binds both this particular murder with a bigger picture right now, completing the nuclear program, which is all part of the same process of ensuring the long-term survival of the regime.
What is the big picture here when you take a look at this, as you say, this thriller story and what it all says about the regime? Where is the regime heading? What is it that it wants?
It's very difficult to know where the regime is heading. The only thing I would say on that is that I was told by one of my interviewees that analysts have been looking for evidence of coups within the regime, looking for evidence of signs of instability in the regime. And they've struggled to find any. And that really tells you something about the power that Kim Jong-un has. Kim Jong-un came to power when his father died in 2011. Now, his father had never really allowed any discussion of a succession. And it was only when the father had a stroke in 2008 that left him, you know, it was a debilitating stroke. It was only after that that they had to come up with a succession plan. So Kim Jong-un really only had about 3 years to sort of develop his own power base and develop the skills, the training that you need to take over North Korea. And when he came to power, he was still only in his 20s. I mean, this is actually quite an extraordinary thing. I think he might have been the youngest world leader at the time. So he was in his 20s, and he was taking over a regime that really takes some skill to run. And he was surrounded by all these officials who had been his father's officials. So these are people that were sort of 50 years older than him. So at that time, this was in 2011, 2012, there was a lot of discussion among analysts about whether he would even be able to do it, whether the regime would last, or whether there would be some kind of coup, or whether, you know, the regime might collapse. And fast forward, what are we, 5 years later, and he's actually managed to consolidate power. I mean, which is actually quite, you know, that is quite an impressive feat that he has pulled off.
What do the analysts know about him, his personality, his intelligence? What do we know about him? What traits do we know that perhaps can help us to understand how he might react or act in the future?
As with all North Koreans, senior North Koreans, it's very difficult to find out information about them. So when Kim Jong-un first emerged as the successor, as the future successor, so this was back in sort of 2009, 2010, analysts really knew very little about him. I think they only had one photo of him. They didn't even know when he was born, how old he was. So, you know, since then, there's been a process of trying to find out information about him. One thing we can say is that he's a very charismatic leader. He's somebody who likes to get close to his people. He's pictured often out and about visiting attractions, visiting ordinary people. He's a very charismatic figure. He also obviously likes to sort of make himself look older than he is. That's something that we've seen, you know, in the way he dresses. He's consciously trying to look like his grandfather, Kim Il-sung, who was the founder of the dynasty. In terms of his personality, there's a sort of caricature that he is a madman, you know, a crazy, fat madman. And the assessment that I've had from the various people that I've spoken to is that that is simply not the case. He's been described as rational, calculating, somebody that thinks very carefully about strategic decisions. And we need to think about him in those terms, somebody that really is, every move that he's making has a design. The only thing I would say, though, is that what we've seen very recently with the personalization of the nuclear weapons program and the the heightened rhetoric between President Trump and Kim Jong-un, it has become personalized. And so once we start to bring in personal emotions, that's where it could potentially become even more dangerous.
What is the North's capabilities, from what you know, from analysts, when it comes to the nuclear threat? We've heard different synopses here. What are you leaning toward from what you know? What is the potential that the North has in this case?
That's a very interesting question, and I will answer it, but I first want to say something, which is that one of the things that we explore in this documentary is North Korea's chemical weapons capability, which is sometimes sort of forgotten in all the talk about the nuclear capability. But the way that they assassinated Kim Jong-nam was using VX, which is the most deadly nerve agent that's ever been created. And part of that surely was to send a signal that they have this capability, that they've been developing chemical weapons. And we have to understand that North Korea really is the only country that has been developing chemical, biological, and nuclear capabilities. So this is a triple threat. But on the nuclear, and it's a very interesting question. The thing that North Korea has said that it wants to do is to be able to threaten the continental United States with a nuclear-tipped intercontinental ballistic missile. Now, the assessment that I've received from various of the experts I've talked to is that they're still some way off that. They're not there yet. There are various processes that they have to go through in order to make sure that the actual weapons can fire the right range, that they can re-enter, that the weapon itself is sufficiently miniaturized. There are various processes that they have to go through before they can do that. But they are fairly close. And as Rebecca Hirschman, who was the Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Defense, she was responsible for analyzing weapons of mass destruction. As she said, the time for buying time is now over. They are pretty much there. Nobody wants to test how close they are to being there.
In your mind, in the last minute that we have here, what is the solution?
I'm not in the business of giving solutions. I'm just able to report what's happened and where I think we are right now. I think what people have told me is that there are these three options that are on the table. The third option, the military option, is profoundly risky. So that really leaves us with trying to pursue the other two options. That's the economic sanctions and the talking to North Korea. As Rebecca Hirschman says, none of them are great options.
Producer Jane McMullen, the film is North Korea's Deadly Dictator. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Nice to talk to you.